You know my title. My title is Galatians 4, 9, and 10, so you can guess what my sermonette is about. It's one of those unclear passages that is used to argue that Christians should not be keeping the Sabbath and the holy days. And this is what it says, Galatians 4. We're staying in Galatians, pretty much. Verse 9, but now, after that you have known God, you're now a Christian, or rather are known of God, how turn you again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto you desire again to be in bondage? You observe days and months, seasons and years. Now, I recently listened to a message about these verses on the same subject. The speaker did a very good job of explaining them, and he got right to the point, to the bottom line, correctly, but it still left a question in my mind. And so I want to restate his main points today, because he was correct, of course, but I also want to elaborate a bit more about what was evidently going on there in Galatians that this verse is about, these two verses are about. So first, his point was, Paul does not say here anything about Sabbaths and holy days. He does not say you observe Sabbaths and holy days. The words are just not here. It's just days and months and seasons and years. He's simply not referring to the Sabbaths and the holy days. That's true. And second, it plainly says that you turn again to these things. The Galatians were returning to something that they had come out of. Now, you can read about Paul's journey to the churches of Galatia, especially the account in Acts 14 about the going to Lystra, where he healed a man. And the people of the city called Barnabas Jupiter, and Paul they called Mercury, and the priest of Jupiter in Lystra was about to offer sacrifices to them. That's what they came out of. So when Paul says, how turn you again to the weak and beggarly elements, this is what they were would be returning to. That's all true. The Greek religion is full of superstitions about lucky and unlucky days and times. They're related to their beliefs about astrology. And that's not hard to understand. You understand that. Best biblical commentators of the last 300 years understood that. They still concluded, if you look in the commentaries, they still concluded that Paul is condemning the Galatians for turning to the Sabbath and the holy days. They still come to that conclusion. I'm talking about the classic commentators such as John Gill, Adam Clark, Albert Barnes, Jameson Fawcett, and Brown. They all unanimously conclude that the days are Sabbaths, the months are new moons, the seasons and years are holy day seasons and things like the sabbatical years. So, how can they say then, or how can they read that the Galatians returned to something that they never kept? Well, the commentators reasoned that the Galatian Christians were being taught by Judaizers who were trying to make them more Jewish. And they conclude that Paul is fighting off these Judaizers by arguing that keeping the Sabbath is very similar to keeping lucky days and unlucky days of their pagan days, and therefore turning back to the Sabbath, or turning to the Sabbath, is like going back to their pagan days. I mean, that's the reasoning. In the wider context, you can see where it comes from. In the wider context of the book of Galatians, it has a lot to say about circumcision and about the works of the law. And so it's justified to conclude that the teachers, the false teachers in Galatia, are Jews. Pretty obvious. They're Jews. No one else would imagine or advocate that you should practice circumcision or would advocate works of the Old Testament law, but Jews. And if the problem teachers are indeed Jews, then the only days and months and seasons to which they would possibly lead the Galatians back to would be the Sabbath, holy days, and such. I think you can sympathize with that conclusion if you accept that premise. And although it is true that the problem teachers were Jews, there are stark evidences in this letter that these Jews were not Judaizers. They were Jews, but not Judaizers. The first such evidence is that these teachers were not from Jerusalem, and they did not represent the Christians, the Jewish Christians of Jerusalem. Just the opposite. The first chapter of Galatians clearly shows that they opposed Jerusalem. Paul goes way out of his way to deny their charge that Paul is merely a mouthpiece for those apostles in Jerusalem. He says he has little contact with them. Right from the beginning, in the first chapter, I won't read all the verses for lack of time, but Paul is emphasizing that he had little contact with Jerusalem. And he does this to combat the claim of these teachers in Galatia that they are truly spiritual. They are more spiritual than the apostles in Jerusalem. They know more about spiritual truth than the apostles in Jerusalem, let alone Paul, who's just the mouthpiece for those apostles from Jerusalem. They are anything but conservative Jewish Christians from Jerusalem. Secondly, it is clear in the book of Galatians that they had no intention of obeying God's laws. Galatians 5, verse 2. Paul says, "Behold, I, Paul, say to you that if you be circumcised, Christ will profit you nothing, for I testify again to every man that is circumcised that he is a debtor to do the whole law." That's not something that you would have to say to a Judaizer or a Jewish Christian who was a former Pharisee. Circumcision to a Pharisee is a sign of coming under the covenant of Abraham, of joining the covenant people and taking on the covenant with God. But these Jewish teachers in Galatia have a very different meaning behind circumcision. For them, it is symbolic of cutting the soul free from the restrictions of the flesh. For them, circumcision is not about keeping the law, but being free from the law, cutting free from it. Their spirituality makes them free. They say their spirituality makes them free. That's why Paul says in 5:13, "Use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh," because they did. They felt they were free from the constraints of the law. And in a large part of chapter 5 is about the fruits, right? He contrasts the spirituality which is demonstrated by their fruits, which he calls works of the flesh. He contrasts that to the real spirit, the fruits of the real spirit of God in verses 22 and 23. And those fruits, he says, he concludes in 22 and 23, those fruits are not against the law. He's contrasting the fruits of the Spirit which are against the law, which are the fruits of the false teachers. But why so much about the law in the book of Galatians? That's the confusing part. Why would these teachers at the same time believe that they are freed from the law of the God of the Jews? And yet Paul has to tell them, tell me, you that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? In what sense do they want to be under the law? And the key here, I think, though these Jews are Jews, they are Jews all right, but they are Hellenistic Jews. They are steeped in Greek philosophy and religion, which is basically the same thing. The Greek philosophy is highly admired in the Roman Empire. And the false teachers want to harmonize that philosophy with the Jewish scriptures. They want to say that the Jewish scriptures came up with that knowledge first, that the scriptures are better. They anticipated the Greek philosophy. If you interpret them correctly, the way they interpret them, they are harmonizing scripture with Greek mythology, particularly the Greek mythology of how things began, which is important. All religions, all philosophies are rooted in a story of how everything began. What is man? Where do they come from? How did we get here? To us, the root of that story is Genesis 1, of course, the creation account. In secular society, the root of their philosophy is the Darwinian theory. But the Greek religion is rooted in a very different story. One account of that story of the beginnings of everything is Plato's Timaeus. The Timaeus was written about 360 BC, and it's an account of how everything began and how human beings work. I like to call it Plato explains it all. He tries to explain everything. Well, scientifically, what he says is nonsense, but in the first century, all throughout the Roman Empire, it was very, very respected and admired. There's a basic premise in that creation story that Plato explains. It's most influential, I think, to these Hellenistic Jews. Speaking of an almighty creator God, Plato wrote, "The creator of the universe addressed them in these words, 'Gods, children of gods, who are my works.'" In other words, there is a supreme creator, but he creates lower gods, and he's addressing these lower gods. He goes on, "Mortal beings remain to be created. But if they were created by me, they would be on an equality with the gods. In order, then, that they may be mortal, you guys betake yourselves of the formation of these creatures, imitating the power that was shown by me in creating you." In other words, lower gods are to create mankind, because the Most High God could not create something so low as the physical in the physical world. This is dualism, right? And going on, Plato writes, "The part of them worthy of the name immortal, I will myself sow the seed. And do you then interweave the mortal with the immortal? And you guys make and beget living creatures and give them food and make them grow and receive them again in death. You lower gods do this." This is called dualism. There's the Most High God far above the physical, but the physical world is created by lesser gods. But the Most High God grants to the mortal human beings an immortal soul. The immortal soul comes from the Most High God. The harmonization of this idea by these extreme Hellenistic Jews became the idea that the God of the Jews is a lower God, an extremely anti-Jewish Jewish idea. That's what they held. And the idea of the Christ is that Christ is a spirit who comes and awakens your immortal soul to its true origin from the real God, the highest God. Okay, if that's the viewpoint of the Hellenists, then why all this in Galatians about the law? Well, to them, the Jewish God is a lower God who has subjected human beings to a law and to control them. But pictured in the scriptures, revealed, if you can understand it, in the scriptures, are symbolisms of the biblical tabernacle religion and clues to the nature of the true God and how to find them. So at once they believe the law imprisons you, but the law has symbols of how to find the true God. They desire to be under the law by performing rites and interpreting symbols that are derived from the law. And circumcision is one of those rites. That's why circumcision has a completely different meaning to them. And there are also many other unnamed rites. Apparently, Paul simply calls them works of law. Why then, what is this business about days and months and years? Why would they be turning then to days and months and years? Again, I'll go back to Plato's Timaeus. He says, "The sun and moon and five other stars, which are called the planets, were created by him in order to distinguish and preserve the number of time," in order to keep time. "And when he had made their several bodies, he placed them in the orbits in which the circle of the other was revolving, seven orbits in seven orbits, seven stars. Again, scientifically, the astronomy is all wrong. It's an ignorant myth. But Plato believed that there were seven heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and five known planets. They form seven layers above the earth, and they were gods. And these seven layers rule over the lives of men. That's why there are good days for some activities and bad days. Each day of the week, in fact, we still use those seven gods as the 7 days of the week, the names of the 7 days of the week. And it all came from a fable of Greek mythology, astrology, to which the Galatians were returning. Why would they? Why would Jewish teachers lead them to Greek astrology? Because they themselves were trying to harmonize the Greek creation myth with the Bible. The identity of the false teachers is unmistakably Jewish. That's a fact, of course. But, as I said, to wrap it up, they are not Judaizers. Their philosophy is not law-abiding. And that's the fact that the great scholars, the commentators, have missed. And so the scripture gets twisted to say that the great principles of worshiping God the way he wants to be worshiped, they say it's been done away with or changed. It's because of the identity of those teachers is not recognized in what they were trying to teach. They had turned the Galatians back to Greek superstitions about the sun and the moon and the planets being powers over us. It is the same superstitions that they had come out of, as Paul had said, of being afraid of weak and beggarly elements as if they could rule our lives.